many people make the mistake to think that tznius is the covering of the body, because the body is something negative, risque, sensual, or whatever, and therefore it has to be covered. That's not really the concept of tznius at all, even though partially it includes that, but that's not the idea. Because if that would be the idea, then covering the body of an animal would be even more important than covering the body of a human being. And I don't know of anybody who's machbid not to go to the zoo unless the animals are closed. In addition, we find tznius by things that this concept could not apply to. For instance, the Medrash says that when the Rabbanu Shalom, when they finished building the Mishkan, the Rabbanu Shalom says, "Kan yofeh hatznius." And in fact, the Mishkan was dressed like a collar. It had a veil in the front and a train in the back. Almost like a collar. Now, the Mishkan obviously was not erotic, sensual, and needed to be covered. So what was the concept of tznius by the coverings of the Mishkan? A second place we find tznius extra special by Talmidei Chachamim. A Talmid Chacham has to wear more tzanua dress than other people, and has to conduct himself more tzanua than other people. Obviously, he's not more erotic, sensual, or whatever than other people. So why is the extra emphasis by Talmidei Chacham? And the third place we find a emphasis on tznius is by women. Also, why? Why specifically by women? And those women that feel that they are discriminated against because the Torah seems to emphasize tznius by them more, are in good company, because you're in the company of Talmidei Chacham and the Mishkan. So I wouldn't complain that much. But why? Why these specific things? So in order to understand tznius, I want to start with what necessitated tznius as we know it, meaning that people have to be clothed. Before the chait of Adam and Chava, there was no need for clothing. It's only after the chait that clothing came into existence. An idea, I think, that can explain this is the following. And there are variations, others say, but what I'm telling you what I think, and it has basis in many, many sources, and it answers a lot of questions and explains a lot of things. Before the chait of Adam and Chava, which didn't last too long, it was very clear that a person is not a body. We are neshamas. Let's discuss that for a second. That is the first principle. We normally think that we are bodies that have little Casper the Friendly Ghost called the neshama flitting around inside of us. It's not the way that it is. We existed as neshamas, all of us, for thousands of years before we came into this world and occupied a body. And after we leave this world, after a long physical life here, we'll return to that spiritual world as neshamas. And we'll return again back into bodies by Tchias HaMeisim. Whether that will be for eternity or not is a machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban. It could be that the final stage of history will again be a neshama in a spiritual world. I always like to look at the body as a spacesuit. An astronaut, as long as he is on this earth, on terra firma, he doesn't need any special apparatus to be able to exist. He can breathe normally without oxygen. He can function normally without a pressurized suit. He can talk normally without a radio. But once he goes into outer space, the environment in outer space is not conducive to a human being. There's no atmosphere, so he needs to breathe oxygen through an apparatus that gives him oxygen. He needs a pressurized suit because there's no air pressure. And he needs a radio to speak through because there are no sound waves. When he comes back to earth, takes off the suit, and he can function again normally. As long as we were neshamos in a spiritual world, we could function very nicely without a physical body. We could see without eyes and hear without ears and get around without arms and legs. We can think without a brain. Our neshama was geared to function in a spiritual world the way that it was. Once the neshama comes into this physical world, it can only function through a physical spacesuit called the body. It needs eyes to see, and ears to hear, and legs to walk on, and so on and so on. When we leave this physical world, we leave the spacesuit here. And we go back to a spiritual world where our neshamas can function without a physical body. Could be that's one of the reasons why the halacha is that we express mourning when someone's nifter by tearing our clothing. It represents the fact that it's only the clothing that's been torn away, but the essence of the person still is there. He's lost the need to have that suit of clothing that he's had to wear in this physical world. Now he's no longer in a physical world, he doesn't need that suit of clothing. So the clothing's been torn away, that's why we tear our clothing. In any case, so that was clear before the chait of Adam and Chava, that man was a neshama and the body was a servant that enabled the neshama to function in this physical world. The problem was that as soon as Adam and Chava were chote, and they used their bodies in a way that did not benefit their neshama, but went against their neshama, now there was a conflict. Now it wasn't clear anymore. Is the neshama the ikkar, is the body the ikkar? The body is not only functioning to serve the neshama and to provide it with a means to function in this world, because the body did something that is detrimental to the neshama. So now there's a conflict between the body and the neshama. So now it's not clear anymore, is the body the ikkar or the neshama the ikkar, since they're two separate individual things functioning independently. Not only independently, but one at the expense of the other. And not only that, maybe there is no neshama. All I see is the body. And if the body is not a tool of the neshama, clearly, then maybe there's only a body. Maybe there is no neshama. At that point, it became necessary to cover the body in order to distract attention from that which you can see. The body is visible. And to make the statement that there's more here than the eye can see. Cover the externals to make the statement there's more here than is visible physically. And that is the ikkar. That's what tznius is. Wherever there is a deep inner spiritual value, and the externals could distract you and mislead you from seeing that inner value, then we cover the externals and we make the statement by covering the externals that what is visible here is not the ikkar. There's something that is beneath the surface that's more significant than what you can see. That's what tznius is. In that respect, the word lehatznia does not mean to cover something because it's negative. Just the opposite. We don't cover the body because it's negative. We cover the body because we don't want to get the wrong impression of what the body's all about. So you cover it in order to give it its real importance. By emphasizing the fact that there's a neshama here, then the body is the servant of the neshama, then the body's very important. But if there's nothing more than the body, then we're animals. And the body is very not important. There's a perek in Masechet Shabbos called Hamatznia. It has nothing to do with tznius. It's a halachic perek that deals with carrying on Shabbos. Just for the case, the sake of simplicity, I'm not going to go into all the details, but just basically, the perek deals, in the beginning, with the following case. Normally on Shabbos, in order to be chayiv a korban, if you were kote b'shoge, or to be chayiv misa, if you did it b'nezit, you have to do a malacha with a shear. there has to be a certain minimal amount. Less than that amount is not considered important enough to get a punishment. You get a spiritual punishment. But you won't get misa, you won't have to bring a korban or whatever. For instance, if you eat chazer, if you eat a kazayas, you'll get malchus. But if you eat less than a kazayas, it's aser to do, and God will punish you, but you won't get malchus, less than a shear. Shabbos also. In order to be chayiv on being motzi on Shabbos, carrying on Shabbos, it has to be a shear. If it's less than a shear, you're not allowed to do it, and you did something wrong, but it's not enough to get a punishment. What happens, though, if you have, let's say, food, the amount of food to carry is usually a kazayas. So if you carry a piece of cake on Shabbos that's less than a kazayas, you're not going to have to bring a chatas if you did it b'shogeg, because it was less than a shear. What happens, though, if you have a piece of your wedding cake that you've been saving for years in a little box, what's it called, and it's not a kazayas? It's a small piece, a memento of your wedding. It's your wedding cake to you. It's very important. You hide it away. And then on Shabbos, you forget it's Shabbos, and you carry that little piece of cake. Then according to some opinions, you're chayiv. Because since you put that away for safekeeping, you show to you that's important. So even though normally less than a kazayis is not important enough to incur a chiyuv chatas on Shabbos, here you would. That process of hiding something away, putting it away for safekeeping, because you show that it's important, is called hamatznia. So we see that hatznah is not hiding something away because it's negative, but it's putting it away because you want to preserve its value. Same thing with the body. We want to preserve the value of the body. The value of the body is, a human body, is that it serves and enables the neshama to function in this world. That's the real value of it. And if you don't cover it, and people look at the body and say, that's all there is, and you reduce a human being to an animal, then the body loses its importance, or a good portion of its importance. So you're hiding it away to emphasize its importance, to keep it away for safekeeping, to hide it to emphasize the fact that it's not the ikker, but as a tuffel, it's a very important tuffel. Therefore, inyan, the opposite of tznius, is pritzus. Lifrotz means to break boundaries, to break out where everything is just outside, everything is just external. The word arum, erva, all have a common source, right, of things that are totally external. Or skin has a connection to iver, to a blind person who can't ever see anything more than just touch the external. He can't see beyond, right, what he can feel. And that's only the external. So or, iver, all represent external things. Arum is where a person is totally exposed externally. Right? It comes from the word arema. And arema is a heap where all you see is the externals. You don't see what's inside. Right? Orma. Orma means guile, deception, where you don't want someone to know what your real inner intention is, you just want them to see the external things that you're presenting so you can fool them. All these words have the same idea in common. They all are external views of things without looking beyond the external. Now let's understand why these other things. There's an idea of tznius. Let's start with the Mishkan. The ikar of the Mishkan is obviously not the gold and silver and wood of the externals of the Mishkan. And in fact, if you approach the Mishkan as that being the ikar, it borders on Avodah Zarah. Because there's no difference between a golden building and a golden calf. I heard a story once. Rav Sholem Shvadron Zatzal's family, somebody from the family, was at the Kosel on Shabbos. And he saw an Israeli with one of these cardboard yarmulkes on, writing a kvittel on Shabbos and putting it in the wall. So he thought maybe it's pikuach nefesh. The guy thinks that, somebody's dying and they need to write this kvittel and it's okay to write on Shabbos. He went over to him and said, what are you doing? It's Shabbos. He said, I know, but but I am the captain of the Israeli soccer team. And we have one of our championship matches this week, and I was sending a message to the wall that we win. That is borders on Avodah Zarah. Instead of mirror, mirror on the wall, it's wall, wall on the ground. Right? You put your wish into the wall, and the wall will answer your wish. That's Avodah Zarah. It's obvious that it's the Shechina, and if it's the Shechina, then the Rabbanu Shalom is not interested in Chil Shabbos. So there's more than just the wall in front of you. So if you give your attention to the externals of the Mikdash, or the Mishkan, or the wall, then you're bordering on Avodah Zarah. So we covered the Mishkan in order to make the statement there's more here than meets the eye. Don't get distracted by what you can see, because we're covering it. And understand that what's really significant here is what you can't see. And that is the spiritual Shechina that envelops, possesses the Mishkan. Same thing goes with Talmidei Chachamim. There's a mitzvah to stand in awe of Talmidei Chachamim. Es Hashem Elokecha Tira L'Rabos Talmidei Chachamim. The same fear and awe that you have of God, you have a Talmud Chacham. But that is very, very dangerous. Because if you direct that at the personality of the Talmud Chacham, it also borders Avodah Zarah. We know people and groups that directed hero worship, idol worship, right, of Gedolim, of Talmidei Chachamim, in a way that they made them into gods. In a way that was never meant, that's not what the Rabbanu Shalom meant, to make people into idols. Not football players, and not baseball players, and not opera singers, and not Talmidei Chachamim either. That's an idol, right? So, therefore, a Talmud Chacham has to play down the externals and say, you have to stand in awe of me, but not me as a person, but the Torah that I possess. I represent Torah because I'm a Talmud Chacham. I possess a lot of Torah. You have to stand in awe of the Torah that I possess, but not me. But if you stand in awe of me, you're bordering on idolatry. So he has to play down the importance of his externals in order to make the statement, there's more here than meets the eye. That's what you have to direct your attention to, not what you can see. That's a Talmud Chacham. Women, the same thing. Women, no matter how liberated and, modern, what's the word I'm looking for? What? Huh? Who? Feminine? Yeah, I'm talking about being very mitkadein, progressive, how progressive the world is, right? Women still are judged mainly on their external properties, their physical beauty. Okay, they still have Miss Universe, Miss America, Miss Israel, right, pageants, and even though they have altered them, right, for the sake of feminism, to include women reporting on their careers and reading their poetry or whatever, but they do it in bathing suits, which has me believe that it's not the poetry or the careers that are the ikar. So that's unfortunately the way the world is. Okay, and in Yiddishkeit, Torah-wise, just the opposite. The ikar of a woman is her inner kedusha, because in Torah, the woman is the ikar kedusha of Klal Yisrael. And I'm not saying that because you are a bunch of women and it sounds nice. It's true, right? Give you one example. There's many. One very simple example. What factor, okay, major factor, determines whether any individual in this world, man or woman, has a neshama kedosha, a nishmas Yisrael, right? Has a holy neshama that's a neshama of a Jew. What is the major factor? It's not the only factor, but it's the major factor that determines whether someone has a Jewish neshama or a non-Jewish neshama. Mother. And mothers, up until recently, have usually been women. Okay? So, therefore, women are the major factor of Kedusha by Klal Yisrael. Because that's where a Jewish neshama emanates from. Not a man could be the biggest tzaddik in the world, and if he has a child by a non-Jewish woman, his kid is a goy. And a woman could be a simple Jewess, and the husband could be the biggest Russia goy in the world, and the child is a Jew. So the factor that determines Kedushas Yisrael is a woman. One thing. Secondly, the Torah was offered predominantly, according to the Marsha, only to the women. The women were never chote by the Egel, by the Meraglim, in the schus of Noshim Tzidkanios who went out of Mitzrayim, and on and on and on. Women occupy a very pivotal portion, place in Klal Yisrael, in the etzem anchor and yisod and foundation of Kedushas Yisrael, okay, throughout history. Okay. Purim is an example of that, Pesach is an example of that, and so on. So therefore, since in the eyes of the nations of the world, a woman's external beauty is where it ends, that's the ikar, and we want to make it clear that that's not the ikar. Therefore, women have to be extra sensitive to cover their bodies in a way that makes the statement, I am not a body. There's more to me here than meets the eye. I'm not an animal. Men have to do that too. But women have to do it extra because the chance of distraction is greater by a woman than a man. That's what it sees. Okay. However, if this would be the only idea of Vitznius, then l'chaora, the best kind of clothing to wear, and that's why what's it called, beged, is called beged because it comes from the Lashon boged, to be a traitor. Because the neshama, the body, went against the neshama, it basically was a traitor. That's why we need begadim. Because if the body would not have rebelled against the neshama and done chatayim, and it was clear that there was harmony between them, we wouldn't need clothing. Then it would be obvious that the neshama is the ikar. You wouldn't be distracted by the body. There wouldn't be a chance to look at the body as something independent of the neshama. So that's begad. Okay? It's also called levush. Levush, the Gemara says, is lo busha. Takes away the busha of a person. What's busha? Busha is relegated to the face. Boshes panim. That's the ikar place where a person is embarrassed. His face turns red. What is the concept of busha? The Reb Shamshon Feuerl Hirsch says the word busha is connected to the word lehis boshesh. Vayar ha'am ki boshesh Moshe. It means to tarry, to be impeded, to be, inhibitions, to inhibit, to be inhibited. That's boshesh. It means the following. Why, first of all, is busha by a person's face? So let's discuss first the word in Hebrew for face, panim, which is probably the most inappropriate word, right, for face that could possibly be. Because you only have one face, so it should be in the singular. And your face is the most external part of your body, so it should be something that reflects externals. So your face in Hebrew should be called a chutz. That's what face should be in Hebrew, chutz. Something external, and it's singular. Why is it panim? Panim means inner, and it's plural. Now, some people are two-faced, but l'maisa, that's not the way it's supposed to be. So why is the word for face in Hebrew a plural word that represents internal? The answer is very simple. Because your face is a screen which broadcasts every inner feeling and emotion you have. Guilt is written on your face, fear is written on your face, happiness is written on your face. You can read a person's face. And there are people who Kabbalistically can look at your face and tell you everything about you. Those are the kind of people I would never want to look at. But in any case, the face reflects the inside of a person. It's a screen that separates between everything that's inside and what's broadcast outside. And therefore, it's not singular, because there's many, many different things that the face reflects, and sometimes at the same time. You can reflect fear and happiness and sadness and guilt all at the same time. So there are things that should remain inside and aren't supposed to be external things that are public knowledge or things that are exhibited externally. There are certain things that are supposed to be kept private, and there are things that are public. The face is the screen that separates between the private and the public. And therefore, a person has to have busha. Busha is something that inhibits you. And an inhibition is something that says, this is not something, right, that I want to broadcast and display externally. It's something that should be kept private, inside. When that inhibitions become sicknesses, then they're problems. But not all inhibitions are sicknesses, right? In the world we live in today, everything is public. Nothing is private. There is no embarrassment, shame in the world that exists today. But that's sick. According to the Torah, there are things that a person should be ashamed to do publicly, and there are certain things a person should be ashamed to do altogether. So there are things that a person should inhibit himself from doing, or at least from doing publicly, because they're meant to be private. And the screen where that is, the red light that goes on, that warns you that this is not something that should be displayed, that's on the face. That's called busha. That's real Yiras Shamayim. Leman kia yiras Hashem al pneichem zehabusha, Chazal say. So that is what tznius is. However, if that would be then the only thing, then lechora, the kind of clothing that we wear should be clothing that covers completely the fact that we have bodies, which would mean that we should probably wear styles, all of us, that cover up our bodies, not just cover the body, but mask the body completely, like a tent. That should be the kind of clothing we wear. We should wear a big tent all around us with two eyelids, and that's it. And a person would walk down the street, and you wouldn't know they had a body. They would just see these walking cylinders walking down the street. Okay? Like some Arab women wear walk like that, right? That's I don't know of anybody yet who holds that that's really what tznius should be. Right? We wear clothing that basically is form-fitting. It basically covers our body and shows that we have a body, whether you're a male or a female. Why do we wear clothing like that? Why do we wear clothing that shows that we have a body that's covered? Wouldn't it be better if we just masked, covered the body in a way that you don't even know the body's there? The answer is there's another term for clothing. The Gemara refers to clothing as mechabdusi, as that which gives me kavod, right? It gives me honor. We wear clothing that reflect externally our honor. Uniforms are like that. A policeman wears a uniform that shows he's a policeman. The clothing reflects externally what is the standing of that person internally. Which means that even though the ikkar is not the externals, but the externals are also important. I'll prove it to you. The Torah goes out of its way to tell us that Sarah Inenu was as beautiful at 20 as she was at 7. Who cares if Sarah Inenu was beautiful or not? She was Sarah Inenu. Does it make any bit of difference that she was a beautiful woman? By Stoisiyah, because the Torah went out of its way to tell us. Says that Rachel Imenu was Yefei Toar v'Yefei Mareh. Who cares? Obviously the Torah cares. It says by certain men, Yosef, Yefei Toar v'Yefei Mareh, even though you could say over there the Torah said it to tell us the problems that it got him into, but the Torah thought it was important. The Gemara speaks about very handsome men, right, who were mamish beautiful people in physical ways. Who cares? Torah cares. Chazal cares. So, what does that mean? Says the Vilna Gaon on the Pasuk, Sheker Hachain, the Hevel Hayofi, Isha Yiras Hashem Itithalo. He explains the Pasuk in the following way. When is Chain and Yofi, Sheker and Hevel? When there's nothing more. When it's merely an external expression of beauty. But Isha Yiras Hashem, in a woman who fears Hashem, he Tisalo, she should be praised for her Chain and her Yofi. Then the chen and the yofi are positive things. Because then they reflect the inner beauty. Now we have to discuss what chayin and yofi are we talking about. What is pretty? Okay? I have to speak from my side of the fence over here, so we'll speak about the beauty of women. Okay? What is a beautiful woman? Okay? What is the standard? So let me tell you that there is a tribe in Africa called the Ubangis. Anybody ever hear about the Ubangis? Tell you a little bit about them. They have a very quaint custom that when their daughters are young, they put a half saucer, very small one, in their mouth between their upper gum and their lip, which stretches their upper lip. Okay? As they get older and the lip is stretched, they put a bigger half saucer and a bigger one. Until when they're your age, their upper lip sticks out to about here. I've seen pictures, okay? And they consider that beautiful. If you don't have an upper lip that sticks out at least 7-8 inches, you will never find a shidduch amongst the Ubangis. If any of you had an upper lip that sticks out 7-8 inches, okay, your parents would send you to the orthodontist, okay, and would spend thousands of dollars to correct the situation for fear that you would never find a shidduch. I had a daughter who needed orthodontia work. I was thinking of sending her to Africa to the Ubangis. It would have been cheaper than the orthodontia work. But the shidduchim there were a little too black for me, so I decided not to send her. In any case, so what's beautiful? To a Ubangi, a woman with an upper lip that extends out 7-8 inches is really, really beautiful. And to an American, right, that is not beautiful at all. Okay? It says Esther was no say schein, the Ene Koro, everybody thought she was beautiful. How could that be? Did she have a lip that stuck out 7-8 inches or didn't she? If she did, she was attractive to the Ubangis, and if she didn't, she was attractive to the Americans. But she wasn't attractive to both of them. How could somebody be attractive to everybody? And what is attractive? It's a very fickle kind of thing. Because in one society, this is what is beautiful. In different societies, it's the opposite. Right? In certain Arabian societies, the heavier a woman is, the more beautiful she is. They give more camels, right, for a heavier woman than a less heavy. And in sick American society, right, that is... people are going crazy to lose weight until they disappear. And that's what causes anorexia and all bulimia and who knows what other machlas, because people are trying to remain their entire life, I don't know what the sizes are, but a size 3 or 4 or whatever, right? It's absurd. And it is very not fair to women to put that kind of burden on them, that the bodies the Rabbi Shalom gave them should be governed, right, by size, weight, whatever. In any case, but that's the way it is. That's the way the culture is. So in one culture, the opposite of what another culture is considered pretty. So that is meaningless. That's not beauty. It says, sorry, Mena was as beautiful as 20 as she was at 7. Now, I don't know, but in my estimation, a 20-year-old woman is prettier than a 7-year-old girl. So why does it say she was as pretty as 20 as she was at 7? Because there's a certain beauty of a 7-year-old that is universal. It's not dependent on cultural things. The beauty of a 7-year-old little girl is the beauty of innocence. It's a outer reflection of an inner innocence of youth, and that's universal. That same inner beauty shown from Sarah Imenu when she was 20 as when she was 7. The people didn't get entangled with her external social kind of beauty, but they saw that inner beauty reflect, and she was like a beautiful woman. She was a charming, like Esther. Esther was charming. She was physically beautiful, but not because of her physical, external attributes, but because her inner beauty shone to the outside, and everybody thought that was beautiful. That's a beautiful person. So tznius excuse me, Sneas is a combination of making the statement that the externals are not the ikker, but then dressing those externals in a tasteful way that reflects that inner beauty, that reflects the neshama. So when someone sees you, how you look, right, they say the way that person speaks and walks and looks tells me that there's something holy here. There is something, what's it called, refined, proper. I can see a very fine person in the way they present themselves externally. So we're not looking to totally mask the body and forget it. We're trying to dress the body in a way, and that's not just clothing. That's how you speak, how you present yourself, how you walk, everything about a person. It's not only women, it's men too. That the sum total of everything is the external view that you present is one that is not only synchronized, but reflects that inner beauty. That's what ultimate sneas is. It's a combination of covering the body and making the statement it's not the ikker, but as a tafel, it's using the body to express that inner kedusha that you have. That's what ultimately what sneas is. The anything else that I want to know? I'll take questions. Okay, and therefore, only the Torah, let me just add this point, only the Torah can decide which portions of the body, right, would give the wrong impression. God made us, and he made us, and this is an aspect of tznius, he wanted there to be a strong attraction between men and women, and even more between men to women than women to men visually, right? That's part of the nature of the world. Men are more attracted to women through what they see, right, than women are attracted to men through what they see. Okay, thank God for that. As a man, that's a metzius. That's without going into any great detail, that's something that's accepted in the secular world too as a fact. Okay. Never being a woman, I can't really tell you for sure. But as from being a man, I can tell you that that's how men function. And women, again, it's not as intense as by a man. And therefore, the Torah wants, again, not to be distracted by the physical attraction that the Torah made, and that physical attraction is there for a purpose. It's for a purpose of creating a bond between a husband and a wife, and the physical bond is also very important. And that physical bond creates a spiritual bond, and without the physical bond, the spiritual bond can't be as strong. So that is what's it called, but it has its place and its time. And where it's not in place and not at the right time, then it's very dangerous. Very dangerous. And that's why the Torah is so makbid on inyonim of tznius and separation of the sexes in a way that it could come to something that's awesome. Right? Because what could be Kedusha and Kedushin, the opposite of that, the same thing, but used the wrong way, is Gilui Arayos, is Tuma, is Pritzus, the opposite. Same exact relationship between a man and a woman can be Kedusha, could be Tuma. Equal. Depends if it's the right time, right place, right way, whatever. So the Rabbanu Shel Olam knows that we are human beings. Right? And therefore, even no one can say, well, I'm not affected. It doesn't bother me. And again, women may not be able to appreciate this as much because you're not men. You may think that you can have platonic relationships with a boy, right? And you're both just looking at each other as human beings and enjoying each other's minds. I'm telling you, as a man, right, that doesn't work. Okay? You may be enjoying somebody else's mind and maybe totally platonic, right? But a man sees things differently. A boy sees things differently. That's part of the nature of a person. And they say that Rav Elazar Yan once had a student come to him, a Talmud, The Talmud said that he wants permission to leave the yeshiva for a day or two. He has a family wedding to go to with relatives, and he wants to go. It's the middle of the summer. So Rav Elia said, I'll give you permission to go to the wedding, but I'm concerned, you know, I know that your extended family is not necessarily frum, and it's the summer. What's going to be with the fact that there are going to be women at this wedding that are not going to be dressed tzanua? He said, Rebbe, Baruch Hashem, I've reached a level where that doesn't bother me. So Rav Elia said, I can go to the wedding, but I want you to call a friend of mine who lives in that city. I want you to see him. So he took the number and he called, and it was a doctor's office. So he came back to Rav Elia Lapyan and he said, Rebbe, you must have made a mistake. I get a doctor's office every time I call this number. He said, yeah, that's my friend. He's a doctor. He said, I'm an 80-year-old man. I'm blind in one eye. And these things still bother me. If they don't bother you, you must be really sick. So I'd like you to see the doctor. Maybe he can cure you. This is the metzias. This is what's it called, the way the world is. There's a reason why the Rabban Shalom gave us these strong attractions, right? And only the Rabban Shalom knows what he created to be attractive. So, girls, I have, Baruch Hashem, my own daughters who've gone, teenagers in their time, and I've heard, you know, what in the world is a exposed elbow? Who in the world is going to be attracted by an elbow? The answer is men. I hope that you are not attracted to other girls' elbows, right? But you're not men. The Torah is very clear, the Rabbanim were very clear of what parts of the body, right, cause this attraction and therefore are dangerous. And to say, well, what difference does it make? An inch here, an inch there. If you knew that there was radioactive material behind that wall, and exactly 8 inches of lead stop the radioactivity, but 7.5 inches don't, would anybody here say, what's a half an inch? I mean, you know, if it's already 7.5 inches, it should be enough. It's not enough. If it's not 8 inches, the radioactivity will go through, and Rahman al-Islam, what could it cause? So an inch here, an inch there, a half an inch there, if that's what the Torah said, right, causes these, the distraction, right, and this has to be covered, then if it's not covered, it's not covered. And that's a problem. So the Torah is koveya what tznius is. What parts of the body, basically the face, according to most shitas, for sure today, doesn't have to be covered. The hands don't have to be covered, right? Because those aren't parts of the body that make that statement or that could be utilized in a way where you would be distracted and think that that's the ikkar of the person. But there are other parts of the body that, yes, do make that statement. Right? And it's part of the teva of a person. The Rebbeinu Shem created that teva. And he didn't create it because he wanted us to suffer or he wanted to test us. He created it for a very positive reason. But every positive thing can be used negatively too, if you use it the wrong way. The Rebbeinu Shem gave us an appetite to eat, and eating can be kedusha. You can eat karbonos, you can eat Shabbos Yontif, you can eat L'shem Shamayim, or you can eat treif, and you can eat as a glutton, right? And it can be the worst tumor. That doesn't make an appetite a bad thing. It's a very positive thing. It keeps people to survive, that they have an appetite, that they want to eat. When people lose their appetite completely, they end up dying of starvation. And the appetite for all other drives that a person has, including the attraction between men and women, is a very chashava, important thing when used properly. And therefore the Rebbeinu Shem created it. At the same time, it can be abused and misused when it's used improperly. And that's why a person has to be very careful, just like by food and by all the other drives that a person has, he has to be very careful to guard them and make sure they don't get out of hand. And make sure he doesn't put himself in a situation where he's out of control. And these kinds of drives can make a person get out of control very easily. So the more that you make fences and fences around it, the better it is. And that's why in these areas, especially these areas, because the Yetzer Hara is so great, right, to abuse these things. And because the drives are very strong, because the Rebbeinu Shem wants them to be strong, that's why the same Rebbeinu Shem told us how to control them and how to see to it that we channel them in the right way and use them at the proper time and place, and that we protect ourselves from using them in the wrong way or for them overpowering us to make use of them in the wrong way. So more or less, that's the message of tznius. Yes, as long as it doesn't, again, attract attention to you in a way that contradicts what that inner kedusha of you is, that's fine. The ikker of any human being, right, is not their external being. It's their entire makeup in kedusha, which includes their neshama, their mind, their midos, right, all of that. And that should be able to be expressed physically, externally, through the way they talk, they walk, they present themselves, they dress, and whatever. Okay? And therefore, a woman, what's it called, can definitely dress in a way that she looks womanly. She looks attractive, but not attracting. There's a very big difference between the two. And a woman, or any human being, should be judged on their totality, right? That includes physical, spiritual, mental, character, and everything as a total human being, right? All those parts put into their proper priority, that's how you look at a human being. Doesn't make a difference, man or a woman. Because again, the Ribbono Shel Olam created a teva by men, okay, to be attracted very much visually by the appearance of a woman. That's the metzias of the world, okay? And I'm grappling with what I should say in that because I don't want to cross the lines of tznius. But just to give you, you're not little kids, okay? Pornography, okay, was rarely successful. Male pornography for women is much less than female pornography for men, which tells you something about the makeup of a man as opposed to a woman. It's not because men are animals. That is not the conclusion. The conclusion is that the Ribbono Shel Olam made men and women different, and men are much more affected by what they see than women are. Women have different attraction to men for different things. You can tell me, I can't tell you anybody. There's never a woman. But men, yes, are, and therefore, a person wants to be extra, extra careful, right, doesn't give himself the chance. This is an extra chumrah, because under normal circumstances, as long as you're not mistakel means to intently gaze at a person for the sake of enjoyment, right, but just to look, right, is okay, I hope, because I've been looking at all of you the entire time I'm speaking here, okay? So that's not called histaklus. That's called just habata. But a person who wants to be extra careful, right? And kol agadol mechavero yitzor gadol mimenu. The greater a person is, yitzor is even greater, because he's on a much higher level. So a person like that may make a siyog for himself not to look at women altogether. There also you have to weigh out the siyog, because sometimes that's insulting to a woman who doesn't understand that, and maybe you're doing more harm by insulting the woman than by protecting yourself. Maybe there's ways of doing it without having to do it in a way that people wouldn't understand or whatever. Or to avoid situations where you're gonna be able to insult somebody, just don't be around women or whatever. But that is, there is something to it. But it's again, it's an extra hiddur, a chumrah, for someone who knows that he needs that. Somebody who doesn't, the normal situation is a man is allowed to look at a woman as long as he doesn't intently gaze at her, and especially not for the sake of getting physical enjoyment. With this attraction?
Quiet.
Yeah, very simple. The greatest drive that a person has is the drive to survive. That includes eating, breathing, or whatever. If you wouldn't have that drive, then you sometimes, when it was difficult, you just give up. As unfortunately, there are older people who just don't want to live anymore. They have no appetite. They don't want to eat. Once you lose your desire to survive, you end up dying eventually, quickly. The second strongest drive of a human being is a sexual drive, because that is also survival. Because without that, life ends in one generation. There's no other generation, okay? In addition to that, it's not only children. But the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted families, and he wanted people to get married and to have a relationship with a wife and a husband, right, a spouse. And that is a dugma to the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because since that drive is such a positive thing in its proper time, right, the Ribbono Shel Olam said that people have the ability, right, if they want to control that drive and to use it when it's necessary. Why should the Ribbono Shel Olam cut it down where it's necessary, right, and where it could lead to real kedusha, right, just because people will abuse it? That's like saying, I'm taking away the appetite for food because people eat treif. The Ribbono Shel Olam didn't do that. But he expected people, and he told us how to control that, and he gave us mitzvahs to control it. And unfortunately, we live in a society where, with all the mitzvahs and all the controls, we live in a society where we're out of control. So we're already two strikes against us. So it's hard for us to understand how it's possible to control these things. But if we would live in a society where from youth we weren't exposed to these aberrations, where it was a real tsanua, the control would be much easier. That doesn't mean that people weren't chote in good societies, but it was much easier to control. In today's society, you can't go into the street without seeing, hearing, knowing, right, about a lot of things that people didn't even know about before. And Mamela, the Yetzirah is already there. So it's hard for us to understand how it's possible to control these things. Because we're starting from a negative standpoint. But if we start from the way the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted people to start, without the cultural influences, it would be easier to control these things. Zeh le'umah zeh. Whenever there is a strong potential for Kedusha, there has to be an equally strong potential for Tumah. The same way that a woman can bring the main Kedusha to the world, she can bring the main Tumah to the world too. Right? The Gemara says that a woman's power of influence is the strongest influence in the world. Right? And therefore, Korach's wife made him Korach, and Om Ben Pelah saved her husband. Chochmas Isha Bon Sabesa, the Iveles Biodeha Tarsena, right? And the Chazal bring a Maisa. There was a Tzaddik and a Tzaddikus who were married, and they got divorced. The Tzaddik married a Rishita, and the Tzaddikus married a Rasha. In the end, the Tzaddikus made her husband the Rasha Tzaddik, and the Rishita made her husband the Tzaddik into a Rasha, and the Medrash ends, Mikan Shakol Toli Ba'isha. Everything depends on the woman, but equally. The woman can be a positive influence, she can be equally negative influence.
So she gives her child the capacity for Ra?
Right. And it's not that she gives him, but if for whatever reason it filters through the woman. She's the one who that child came from. So Rivka had within her, right, the Lavan and the Besuel or whatever. She also had within her own godless. One resulted in a Yaakov, and the other resulted in Esav, who himself could have, with his Bechira, channeled that, but he chose not.
So then why would it be the kind of like blame from the mother?
It's not a blame, it's a pagans, and it's an embarrassment to her.
Okay.
So it wasn't, we're not blaming her, but we're having Rachmanis on her, right, that since it came from her, why should we publicize that and embarrass Rivka publicly in the Torah?